harmony with nature and the land. Man, you wish to live more peacefully with all your fellow man. If self-reliant living is a big part of your plan, if you like to talk some politics with those who really can, this is the time, this is the place, Creekside with Don and Jay. Sit right down, make some space, Creekside with Don and Jay. Let's get started right away, Creekside with Don and Jay. No more singing, no play, Creekside with Don and Jay. Creekside with Don and Jay.
Well, hail and howdy, it's Creekside with Don and Jay. Hi, I'm Don Stover.
And I'm Jan Stover, and this is episode 358 on December the 10th. And we have a special guest with us tonight, Rebecca Dawn. Welcome, sweet. Rebecca.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Well, and you've been here before, and I just want to tell people who might be tuning in for the first time, Rebecca is an artist, a mother, a wife, a teacher, an herbalist, a friend, a writer for the Owl Creek Gazette, and you've done a little bit of everything we've been involved in. You've spoken at one of our exposiums. You've been a vendor, and it's just nice to have that connection with you. And every once in a while, we make that connection again and said, come on over to the creek, Rebecca, and you do. So we're glad to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
And, you know, off mic, we've been talking amongst ourselves like we normally do, and we go, well, we really wish we should have recorded all of that and
the pre-show,
and it's so nice to see you in our new digs, and I mean, this is where we are now, and you never had been in the other room when we were recording the last time, but you had been over in our South Building, mm-hmm. 112. Mm-hmm. That's where, 112 South 2nd Street, that's mm-hmm. where we used to have Don's Uniques and Repairs in the Owl Creek Gazette office, mm-hmm. and that's where the podcast was done from.
And since we've had the coffee house, you have sauntered in and had some London fog from time to time,
as I believe.
It is good stuff, yes.
People love London fog.
They do. So tonight, we want to talk a little bit about something that you've been involved with for a long time, being a death doula, and the whole idea of how we view death, how we can help each other through the process. And so you want to do some workshops, and you touch base and said, you know, maybe now with the coffee house here, we can present those.
Well,
so,
right off the bat, though, it's an uncomfortable subject for some people. And
sure.
And how do you break that barrier, really?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I'm still, I think, searching for that. And I think just like what we're doing right now, mm-hmm. just having a conversation about it and shining some light on it. And, you know, it certainly wasn't something that was on my radar in my life. I'm always hesitant to say, well, in our culture, we don't talk about death, because I actually grew up in a family where we did talk about death mm-hmm. a lot. And so I was kind of surprised to find that that's not the case mm-hmm. in other places. So I guess right off the bat, I want to recognize that we have subcultures within mm-hmm. The dominant North American culture. But we seem to be very death phobic is mm-hmm. the word, sort of the parlance of the death trade, mm-hmm. right? We don't, even in hospice situations, I'll come in and the family or a nurse will say, you know, well, don't say the H word, which is hospice, mm-hmm. and don't say the D word, which is death. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of questions about that. And I don't know that it's always the right thing to beat somebody over the head with that, like, hey, you're dying, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wisdom and things that come out of not talking about it directly, but there's also a lot that can come out of it from talking about it directly.
Well, and I even think there was a time when people wouldn't even say the word cancer. So you're saying the H word, the D word, the C, the
yeah,
big C.
Yeah, the C word. So there's, I used to have some really strong feelings, like people should always know about their diagnosis. They should always know what's going on. And there is a really wonderful This American Life, which is a show that I love, mm-hmm. called In Defense of Ignorance. And the first story actually became a feature film called The Farewell. And it's about, I think, a Japanese family. And in their culture, they have this saying, like, people who get cancer die. When you know you have cancer, then you just kind of give up. Mm-hmm. Which, and I think that there's some wisdom mm-hmm. in that. So let's go, let's be with grandma and be fully present with this knowledge that we should have had. We should have been carrying this knowledge all along that this elder is precious, that our time with them is limited, and come into it not necessarily needing to tell her everything that is seen on the x-ray, mm-hmm. but knowing, holding the preciousness of our time together in a different way.
And knowing that since every soul is precious, from the day you are born, you should have that reverence.
Absolutely.
For that life.
Absolutely. And something that I have come to over time, and not easily, I mean, a hard one, I think, knowing of that holding this truth at the center of your day, like this could very well be the last sunset that I see. Mm-hmm. And it gives it a different quality. It gives it a different quality of attention, and it helps us to live on purpose mm-hmm. and be really intentional about our interactions with people and what we want our lives to be about. And so I think that for me, that's what it's more about. I don't ever come into a space feeling like I know how people should do things. I know how, what kind of medical intervention you should have and you should not have. And I want to just open up the box of questions for people to explore that for themselves, because I think we become better people mm-hmm. when we're in that more vulnerable place of our fragile humanity.
Well, that's a really good way to put it. Our humanity is so bloody fragile, and there's just nothing you can do about extending it at some point in time. And extension is no longer an option. Right. We are all at some point terminal.
Right. None of us are going to get out of here alive.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're not going to take it with you.
Right.
Whatever it is.
That's
and,
right.
And if you've got something to say to your loved ones while you're here, my goodness, make the best of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what perhaps a diagnosis helps people do. But some people focus on the diagnosis rather than what they can do in spite of it. So that's really kind of what talking about it and what the workshops you want to present mm-hmm. kind of help people, don't they?
They help bring those things into focus. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've never thought about that before. You know, when someone dies, the whole family unit or the whole village is plunged into very fast moving waters. And so having been through that several times, mm-hmm. I know some spots along the shoreline where there's some more shallow water.
And something to grab.
And
perhaps.
Something to grab mm-hmm. onto. And I can help people a little bit make maps for their loved ones. It's really hard when someone you love dies, but you don't know what their wishes are. Mm-hmm. It's really hard when someone's on life support and you don't really know what they want. And so that is what the death box is about compiling that information in one place so that in the event of your death, you can, you know, let people know where that is. And then they open this thing up and it's like, this is the kind of funeral I want. This is the kind of thing this, and you get to kind of help them set that tone. Mm-hmm. Not that your death necessarily belongs to you alone. It belongs to people who love you, and it's going to be flavored by their interpretation of what you want. But it's so helpful to leave a guide for people.
Sure. And, you know, I remember, and if I start bawling here, forgive me, but mm-hmm. I could.
That's part of it. It's okay.
when my dad passed away, prior to his passing, which was absolutely, completely unexpected at the time that he passed.
Even though he'd been ill, you weren't expecting that to happen.
Yeah, we were not
expecting
it. Yeah, right? It was not part of the prognosis. I'd said, you know, good night to him. He was in the hospital in Centralia, and but that's another story. But prior to his passing, we had had a dinner. We'd all gotten together. You remember, it was you and me and Danny and Dave and the kids, and I think we were all at
a restaurant
at a restaurant in Centralia. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dad expressed what he wanted us to do. Mm-hmm. And that was...
What a gift.
No kidding, yeah. I had my marching orders, by George, and that's what I was going to do.
And yeah, because in that moment, right, part of grief is... not being able to think and not being able to make decisions.
Right.
And so just to have those, to be able to go like, all right, we're have a list of things to check off. Like this is the direction we're going.
Right.
Because the water moves so fast and you're in grief. You're right. Not thinking clearly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had my little marching orders. Dad had his wishes that he expressed directly to us, and in that process, I knew what I had to do. If when he died, I didn't have to ask, what do you want me to do? Had the information ahead of time. And then it was a couple months later, he unexpectedly passed away. And so I had direction. Mm-hmm. That's a gift you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
Well, and I even remember when my dad passed away, there were certain things we didn't know that he wanted, but we looked to what we did when his older brother passed away, and he had helped kind of direct that. So in one sense, we had a guide in that he had helped choose what ways to handle things for his older brother. So that was kind of nice, too. But I love the idea of a death box, and that's something that you would... what go through people at a workshop and say, this is what do you want to say and what do you want to leave?
Exactly. And there's like a list of prompts and, you know, just things to think about that to just have it written down. What do you want your social media accounts? Do you have passwords that you need to leave people? Are there, you know, all of, you know, if you can think of as many of those loose ends as possible. And I think that it's something that all of us can do regardless of our age. And, you know, and at the new year, I think it's a really nice time to think like, oh, you know, I had a great year. We're heading into this next year. What if I don't live through this whole year? Right? That's a really powerful meditation, actually, to just think about that. Like, if I knew that I only had 1 year left, what would I do this year? Like, wow, what a compass for what's meaningful and important in our lives. And then, you know, steering in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the death box. You also talked about the Five Wishes workshop to us offline. So if you are off air, so if you want to express what that would be too.
Yeah, the Five Wishes is a document that a group of medical doctors have put together that acts as a living will. And actually at the workshop, if more than three people come, we can actually sign and be witnesses for each other. And then you have your legal document. Mm-hmm. It goes into, you know, what you want end stage care to look like when you are no longer able to voice for yourself. If you are no longer able to voice for yourself, how you would like your family and friends to proceed with your care and your physician. Mm-hmm. There's a five wishes and you just go through those and they have like almost a multiple choice type setup and you just strike out anything that you don't agree with and just, you know, and then add things that if there are things that aren't there that are important to you, you just add those in. You can add as many pages as you want to add. And then you have that document for your death box. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really concrete guide. So we'll do one workshop where we talk about all of the things that could be in the death box. And then we'll actually, the next week, we'll actually take 2 hours and sit down together and go through some of these things. Well, what does it mean? What does comfort care mean? You know, what are life-sustaining measures? Like, what do those things look like and what does that mean? And it's nice to do it in a group because I know a lot of us like, oh, I should get my living will done. I should get that together. But, you know, when's a good time? So it's nice to just get together as a community and look at some of those things.
And this seems like a better way to do it, at least a significant way to do it that doesn't involve a percentage for somebody else who's got a vested interest in making sure that...
Right. There's no agenda.
Right.
Right. It's just the questions. And I'm all about that. And then I'm all about, you know, every January or every New Year, go back and look at it. Do you still agree with all of that stuff? Because we learn things mm-hmm. and our minds change about things.
Our health changes, our family situations change.
Yeah.
So there's someone else may have passed in that year that affect how you see the coming year as well. So that is wise to reevaluate every year.
And I also encourage people to touch base and call, you know, that person who you asked to be your power of attorney. Mm-hmm. Call them, you know, and make sure that they're still on board with that and mm-hmm. still know what your wishes are and all of that.
Mm-hmm. And it's 100% legal for you to do this, and it has to be recognized at your probate, right?
It is. And it's Illinois is actually interesting with the five wishes. Some states require a notary. Illinois mm-hmm. does not.
Just witnesses.
So as long as you are signed by the witnesses cannot be related to you, and they cannot work for your physician. They can't be part of your medical team. So they can't stand to benefit from mm-hmm. your answers in any way.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's monumental. Mm-hmm. It really is, especially out of Illinois.
Yeah. Yeah, and I buy them in bulk. So I get them for like $1 a piece. And then I can share them. And
Yeah.
That's so cool.
You know, I was thinking about when you're saying your final wishes, and I remember my dad, the last thing he ever said, I was in the room with him, and he never wanted to, as he would say, be a vegetable. He didn't want to just, you know, lay there on machinery. And he looked up at me, and he'd been kind of in and out. And he looked up at me, and the last thing he said ever to anyone was to me, and he said, "You know, don't you? I don't want to lay here a vegetable." And I said, "I know you don't, Dad. So you stay with us as long as you can. And when you have to go, you have to go, and that's okay." And so he was assured that his wishes would be granted. And I'm so glad he had that strength at that moment to look up and tell me that. We all knew that, but he was going to make sure we knew it.
Well,
and
he needed was handled. He was afraid,
right.
Maybe, had some fear that there were going to be some tubes coming his way.
Right.
Right.
And exactly.
And what a beautiful gift you gave him, too. I know that oftentimes people who are dying enjoy to have that permission mm-hmm. from family members to say, "We're going to be okay. We're going to miss you. But when you need to go..."
And that was
want you to go.
Right. That was a hard thing to say, but he knew that I'm inclined to hang on to whatever it is at the very, not just life and death, but other situations. I have a tendency to be overwhelming.
Yeah, she's a hanger.
Yeah.
And there's something so visceral and so physical about death, and obviously, but watching someone you love die. And I think that's why we're in such a pickle with our medical interventions at the end of life, because it's so hard to do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to do nothing. And that is what's required of us
mm-hmm.
when we're witnessing and being present for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is the most important thing that anyone could do to be
there with that person and to know that you've made that final connection. you know, and to watch, because we, you know, I've been with mom and dad, and I left dad to come home, and he was with my brother and my mom, but the final words were said to me. And so, and then, like I said, with mom, we were there, my brother and I were there when she passed away, and then Don came in just a few minutes after. And so you hold those moments. And it's wonderful and sad all rolled into one.
Wonderful and terrible.
Yeah.
And a lot of my work as a death doula is taking that time to be even after the death occurs, you know, because those fast waters, you know, we've got to clear out the hospital room if you're in a hospital. If you're in your home, you still feel like you need to do something.
To make a casserole.
Yes, my parents have a pack to go make some tea.
Yeah, like, there you go.
Just take a deep breath and slow down.
Make some tea.
And I have found that in those hours after death, if the family can slow down and just be in that space, that liminal space right after death, you know. Thanks to our Buddhist and Jewish brothers and sisters, we can stay with a body.
Sit in Shiva.
Yeah, for 3 days. Mm-hmm. You know, but most people don't want to do that long. But even if you can just do 4 or 5 hours to bathe and oil the body or wash the hair, or like, because those moments are so full.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like getting your lifetime of grief therapy on the front end. And then you come back to those moments again and again of, you know, washing the feet or washing the body. And I think that there's something so innately human about wanting to create these simple ceremonies with our dead. I remember when our dog, Oren, died. He was a big Australian shepherd, and, you know, we got out the shovels and the pickaxes, and we dug and we dug, and we told stories the whole time we were digging. Mm-hmm. And my oldest son looked at me and was like, man, I really wish we could have done that for grandma. Like, that felt so much better than leaving her body in that casket for the machines to take mm-hmm. care of and lower her. Like, there's something we need, and that is, I would like to shift our thinking from this programming that we have of doing is calling someone to come take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe doing is doing mm-hmm. something.
Well, you know, maybe we need to also consider the Foxfire series. The folks in Appalachia
mm-hmm.
have got a handle on mm-hmm. what it's like to bury your dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that those traditions have been maintained and passed on, where we've somehow separated. It's still okay, like you said, to do with your animals, but the family members, it's more clinical. It's been removed from us.
Well, just like birth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly.
And you know, I see so many parallels, having come from a home birth background and having that be just so, like, viscerally and important to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, to have my children away from surveillance. And in the same way, you know, wanting to have that same liminal space around death. And there are some great books. Reimagining Death goes through a lot of that kind of stuff. There's another book called, I think it's called The American Way of Death, which really outlines, like, families still have those rights.
Mm-hmm.
Families still have those rights around the dead body. But we've lost the language to ask. We've lost the...
We've acquiesced.
Yeah, because it's...
To another source. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And part of it is hardly acquiesce. We didn't know there was an option. So that's what you're doing, is
right.
telling people
and so
there's an option.
And I'm not saying that everybody needs to dig their own parent's grave, but I think it's special to know that you could.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's something invaluable in that in that action and in that doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. And I'm, like I said earlier, I don't want to get verklempt here because this is it's a ground that's got pitfalls and no place to grab, and for you to be, like you said, to show you where the waters are and where it's shallow and you can take hold, that's so bloody important. And so thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, a couple thoughts come flooding in, but you know, just remembering that, grief is messy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And there's no right or wrong way to go through that and experience that. And you know, I wasn't always so zen about the whole thing. You know, I've had my
that comes with practice, right?
And you get thrown something.
Well, no kidding, though, a practice, mm-hmm, really,
right?
Yeah,
and that's when you place yourself in those positions,
or you get plunked down in,
you get thrown into, mm-hmm, the into the position that you don't want to be there, and you go, okay, well, I'm going to be able My psyche, my training, my capacity allows me to go, let's take a deep breath. Let's take a look back. Here's what I know. Here's what we can do. And this is what we do. You go make some tea. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, it gives you the respite. When in doubt. Boil some water. Yep. Whether birth or death, boil water.
That's right. That's so right.
Well, and we've also mentioned in the past, and I think you tried to start a little bit of this, a death cafe. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you would tell our listeners what that is, and it goes hand in hand with what we're talking about, of course, and, you know, what they could expect if they wanted to come to that.
Yeah, so the death cafe, which will be the first January on the 11th, the death cafe is the most wide open space. There's no agenda. I might come with a couple thoughts and ideas, but I'm not going to share those unless, you know, no one else has anything to say. Mm-hmm. It's like a talking circle. It's, mm-hmm, a community coming together, asking questions, where are other people at?
Circle without a beat.
What are we curious about? Why don't we talk about death? Have you had these conversations with your family? Have you not? You know, and just have it be a real...
Without a why not. You don't have to go in that space.
Right. Exactly.
And that's good.
Yeah. And so if there's lots and lots of people, we might break up into smaller groups. Mm-hmm. And so everybody has a chance to share and listen. But if there's, you know, less than a dozen of us, we'll probably just sit together and share thoughts and ideas.
So we started at the last workshop and worked back.
Yeah.
But you came up with the idea, like you said, of those three different topics with the Death Cafe, the Five Wishes Workshop, and a Death Box Workshop. That one, we'd like to have that, and the goal is January 11th, 18th, and 25th. That's a Saturday. Each of those are Saturdays from noon to 2 right here at Creekside Community Brew Coffee House. And we've got a nice area that, you know, you can just come in, and like you said, if we have three people, we can do something. If we've got 33, we can go that route.
We can go to the other room. Yeah.
We've got other space, but I think that we've had so many people in lately mentioning how they feel invited to converse, mm-hmm, here, that there's an atmosphere that lends itself to that, and coffee houses should. It's not that that's a new phenomenon, but it is nice to see that they're feeling that, which means they might feel more inclined to come and talk on a subject that they might be uncomfortable about or just have never had anyone mention it to them.
And, you know, the holidays can be really hard.
Mm-hmm.
First holidays, I found actually the second year to be harder, which surprised me and dismayed me. Mm-hmm. I thought the worst of this was behind me. I don't want to discourage anyone this is your first,
but again,
holiday,
right?
But just to illustrate, grief isn't something you get over. Mm-hmm. It's something that you carry with you. It's something that changes you. It's like having another room built on to your interior. I mean, it doesn't just go away. It's like this whole new space for your humanity to occupy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would just invite people who are experiencing that kind of thing, like this first year, the first Christmas or the second Christmas, or like this is, it's a dark, hard, can be heavy time of year for people. And so this would just be a safe place to mm-hmm. just come and share.
We have a friend that we'd like to invite, you know, that we know here that might benefit from although his person had just recently passed, he's got to go forward, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it would be, we'd be really good for him to mm-hmm. be here.
Well, and I think in reality, since we've, you know, made the point that we're none of us getting out alive, there's a lot to deal with, and you never know when those feelings rise to the surface. Mm-hmm. There are times that I miss mom and dad terribly, and I've noticed when I'm sick, I miss them more. And I always say that the missing is right under the surface, and when I then am sick, that is kind of peeled back mm-hmm. because I already am, you know, taking everything I can to just get through whatever illness it is.
And it's like pulling off a scab, mm-hmm. you know.
And there it is.
And for me, that has been a door to such transformational compassion, to just stand on a street corner or in a busy shopping area and look around and realize everyone has experienced that kind of coming apart at the seams mm-hmm. at the loss of someone they love. And if they haven't yet, they're gonna.
They will.
And mm-hmm. isn't that such a door for compassion? And mm-hmm.
It shows another way in which we are all alike rather than different.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that is always helpful to be reminded of. We are more similar than we are different in life experiences. There's some basic bold issues we all mm-hmm. have to deal with. So is there anything else you would like to tell us about what got you into this? I know you said personally you've had some issues and you've chosen this as kind of a, well, I guess what you said is not exactly a career.
No, because this is something that is always a not contentious topic, but it's always an interesting thing to explore. I heard one of my elders and a teacher said, you know, we have an economy, not a culture. And when she said that, I about fell off my seat. Like the depth of grief and potential healing in that one little nugget, like, just blew me away. And I've been struggling for a long time because I don't charge people money for calling me and asking me questions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, but there's this whole, like, death doula culture that's bubbling up as, like, this is a certified professional job,
mm-hmm.
which I am certified, but I think this is the job of the village. I think this is about community building and about helping our neighbors through something that's really difficult. And I'm not in a peaceful place to charge money for that.
Mm-hmm. So you're not in it for the money.
I don't. I do host a series of like retreat type teachings that I do with a lady who's a hospice nurse, and I do get paid to teach mm-hmm. in some settings, but it's not a career. It's something that I'm really passionate about and that actually feeds my career as an artist.
We were even saying that before we sat at the mics, is the fact that it is, you are an artist, and really this is a holistic, your art is holistic, your interest in helping neighbors through this is a holistic approach, I think, to look at life in general. don't mm-hmm. you, when you see it like that? It's a connection.
Well, yeah, and none of it's separate.
Right.
You know, or teaching about plants, which I also do, mm-hmm. and I do get paid for that. But, you know, just teaching about the plants that are around us and available for us to use, like, it's like unplugging from that consumer culture a little bit. Or looking, maybe a better way to say it is seeking ways to create culture in a economy.
Well, in that economy
and
thing.
Some, yeah. Even the workshops that you'll be having here, there's a small fee simply because there are products or what aspects you will be giving them and providing them. So it's not like you're, you know, the fee is...
It's a reimbursement cost.
Pretty much, yes.
Well, yeah, and I also want to say that I think of that as a donation. Also, if somebody can't pay, doesn't have $5 or whatever, I don't want them to not come. I want them to come right. and talk and have a conversation with me, and mm-hmm. Because I'm fine with that. And
well, that's a good way to look at it. That is it a donation, but don't let it stop you from not coming.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because there are. I mean, I do, and I have found that when I don't. When I show up for people, people recognize that energy and mm-hmm. that effort, and mm-hmm. I get wonderful things. You know, mm-hmm. they repay me with their energy in ways that seems good,
mm-hmm.
and it works out. So
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. So,
well, even when you had a table at our last Earth Day event. Last spring, and you were there and showed a lot of the herbs and how they could be used to help in death and dying, as well as wellness. It was nice because you shared, you had flowers, and before it was done, we all had flowers in our hair, and it lightened. I mean, it was raining outside, and it was a dreary day, and all of a sudden, we were all smiling and having fun. So that was kind of a give back scenario too while you were there, and yeah. I remember that day with fondness. So.
Oh, yeah. It was fun. And Rebecca, how do people get a hold of you just otherwise? What's your favorite method of contact?
People can email me. That's pretty good. That's Mulberry Mud with two D's. So MulberryMudd at yahoo.com. I check that frequently and we'll get back to people. So if you've got questions or you're struggling or you want to reach out that way, that's fine.
And I will go on record as saying you can contact us and we can contact you if you don't have an electronic method to get a hold of you. We'll do it for you.
Right. Yeah. If they're in the coffee house or something.
Yes, here at the coffee house, and mm-hmm. we'll put you in contact.
Yeah.
And in the January-February issue of the Owl Creek Gazette, you're going to be writing a little more of an explanation as to the workshops and what people can bring with them and what they can take away from the whole experience, too. So we'll look forward to having your writing in the Owl Creek Gazette again.
Yeah.
Hey, it will be fun. And it's always a pleasure to have you here. And we're out of time, and we could go on for, I feel like we could go on for hours, but we need to wrap it up. Is there a pearl that you would like to leave somebody that would be stellar to get them to contact you?
A pearl of wisdom?
A pearl of wisdom. Drop a pearl for us if you would.
Or tell us about the butterflies.
The pressure of a pearl.
You told us that we were your butterfly.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Yeah. So when I went out to apprentice with one of my teachers, one of my herbal teachers, she told me that it was important to her to always have butterflies in her life. And butterflies are older people who you admire, who are doing things that inspire you.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So. You're our ladybug.
A younger person.
That's right. And I had just said for the January-February issue, I want to start writing a column called Elders in the Heartland. And I think that's that same principle. There's so much to be learned, whether it's about life and living or death and dying. They the elders that go before us can help us along the way in so many ways.
Absolutely.
So we'll continue to learn from them and share with each other.
Yeah, and I remember when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross started this in the 70s.
Yeah.
And asked that initial question, and she was just lambasted for it publicly. And no, that's not what we're talking about. Everybody dies.
Right.
And we've got to realize that everybody dies.
And help everyone live.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
how's that for a pearl?
Yeah. Rebecca, thank you for joining us.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and come back anytime.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Good night, folks.
Y'all take care.